Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Just coming back from an offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Declan Drake, standing in this week for Reggie Corrigan. You're very welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Action-packed programme between now and 11 o'clock this morning for you. We'll shortly be kicking off by speaking to our very own Ken Doherty live from Milton Keynes about his sporting highlights throughout the week, and there's been many in football and tennis and other sports as well. In racing, we'll be chatting to racing pundit and Racing Post contributor Andrew Blair White as he previews this weekend's races and of course shares his lucky 15 with us. In GAA, I'll be talking to two-time All-Ireland medalist Shawnee McCarthy from Cork, looking ahead to their clash with Limerick in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship this evening. And we're thrilled to be joined in studio by former Dublin minor and under 21 manager as it was at the time, Sean Lane from Ballinteer St John's, to have a look back at last week's victory over Antrim in the Senior Hurling Championship and preview this afternoon's clash with Galway at Croke Park, as well, of course, as Kilkenny and Wexford, which follows it. In golf, we'll be chatting to one of Ireland's leading golf amateurs, Deirdre Smith, about the ongoing Dubai Irish Open at Mount Juliet, which finishes up, of course, tomorrow. The Irish going really well in that one. In football, we have Alan Cawley from Cawley's Call on the line for a special extended review of this week's European Championship matches, and also, of course, a look back at what's been happening domestically in the SSE Airtricity League as well. And in tennis, we'll be joined by former tennis professional Conor Nyland as he looks back at week one of Wimbledon and ahead to week two, the business end of the championships there in SW19. And then in rugby, we'll be speaking to former Ireland and Leinster hooker, as well, of course, as Lions man Shane Byrne, about the latest in the rugby world, including a review of the England-Ireland under-26 Nations game during the week and a look ahead to the test against Japan this afternoon at the Aviva Stadium and, of course, the Lions tour as well. And as usual, you can get in touch with us on the show. Text is 087-1155-777. We're on WhatsApp at 087-188-1068. And of course, all across social media and Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport. Twitter account is at Sport1068. And we're on Instagram as well, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. So yeah, you can get the flavour of what's coming up over the next couple of hours in the programme, and hope that you can stay with us for some, if indeed not all, of that. Now, as promised, we're going to start the show by speaking to our very own Ken Doherty, who's on the line from Milton Keynes this morning. Good morning, Ken.
A very good morning to you, Declan. How are you?
Not too bad. How are things in the world of the MK Dons?
Yeah, very well. I'm actually up in Lincoln today. I'm playing a little exhibition up in Lincoln, but of course all excitement over here about the match tonight. Of course, Ukraine against England should be a cracker. I know it's going to be in Rome and not going to be many English supporters. It won't be the same as Wembley, of course, but still everybody is very, very excited about the match tonight, you know, and I'm very excited myself. I backed Ukraine. I told Reggie a few weeks ago, I backed the Ukraine at 130-1 outsiders from the beginning of the tournament. So they're still alive at the moment. So I'll be secretly cheering them on tonight later on.
Yeah, so you'll be sitting there in your wherever this evening in your yellow shirt with Shevchenko on the back.
No, definitely not. No. I value my life a little bit more than
maybe not in Ireland, indeed. But look, what a week it's been for football. You can get disillusioned quite quickly with international football, Ken. But my God, this week at the Euros has certainly re-injected life into it, hasn't it? Particularly Monday with those two epic games, which we didn't know what was going to happen in them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame for France, really. I mean, that's probably Reggie is not in today. He's probably still disappointed because I think he backed France and Portugal like I did from the outset. But I thought, yeah, it was disappointing for France. But, I mean, what a win for Switzerland. It was fantastic, you know. And, you know, I think the matches this year, the Euros, there's been so many good ones. There's been so many highlights, you know, and there's been a few low, of course, the Ericsson thing, but how well Denmark have come back after that. and really sort of gather together as a group. And of course, they've got a big match against the Czech Republic today. But yeah, the matches have been fantastic. A lot of standout performances. And even last night, I mean, yesterday, Belgium against Italy was just fantastic. Spain going through on penalties against Switzerland. And a lot of people spoke about Italy, didn't they? And Mancini saw it at the beginning of the tournament, saying they were on this fantastic run, record-breaking run for them. And they're still going strong, you know, and they look very, very strong. It'll be a cracking match, Italy and against Spain in the semi-final.
Yeah, Roberto Mancini mightn't necessarily win just the best dressed coach award at this tournament. He win the tournament as well. But let's have a little look back at the other night, England against Germany. Tremendous atmosphere at Wembley. Fantastic to see 40,000 plus people, and the scenes when the goals went in, particularly the second one. It's just a reminder of what we've missed so badly in sport over the last 18 months or so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I was to be honest, I'm delighted that England are through. You know, it's a great opportunity for them. They're still living in the shadow of, like, you know, the 66 team is the last time they won anything. They came very close, of course, in 96, didn't they? With the likes of Sherry and Shearer and Gascoigne and all those great players that they had. But yeah, there's a lot of pressure on them, but I thought they played really well against the Germans, you know, and delighted for Harry Kane as well. You know, he's had a lot of critics. He hasn't been scoring. It looked like he hasn't been playing well, sort of bereft of confidence and stuff like that. But for him to score, and of course Sterling has been the outstanding player as well for England. There's been a lot of great players for England, but I think Sterling has really sort of come to the fore in this tournament. And he could end up being top goal scorer. He's two behind Ronaldo. He's on three. And they've got the Ukraine. And then, of course, they're in the sort of easier half of the draw as well. But it's great. I think over here, like, particularly, you know, the excitement for England of being there and playing at Wembley as well. I think it's going to be 60,000 for the semi-finals and finals, which is fantastic as well. So the atmosphere has been electric, you know.
Yeah, as you say, they're playing in the Stadio Olimpico in Rome tonight, and the majority of the English fans that will be there will be expats living in Italy because of the travel restrictions and all that. I suppose we should urge a note of caution about England, shouldn't we? I personally was very happy that they beat the Germans the other night, because I always like to see teams deliver on their potential. But just in relation to Harry Kane, how much, Ken, do you think, if at all, he's been thinking about his next move and how that has impacted his game?
I think so. You know, I mean, it looks like that. He looks jaded as well, doesn't he? I mean, a lot of it. But I think that girl is what he needed. I mean, like, confidence is everything in sport. You know, I know it from my own sport. You know, you go through rough patches, but you only need one little spark just to ignite the flame again. And hopefully that will, because he's a class player. He's been a great player for Tottenham. He's going to go on to a big move. I don't know whether he's going to go to United or City or wherever he's going to go after this Euros. But obviously, it might be playing a little bit of a part on that. But I think scoring that goal will ease so much pressure off him, and it might see a different Harry Kane tonight, you know.
Speaking of moves, have Manchester United any money left after Jordan Sancho's purchase? You must be excited about that.
Well, I hope so. I mean, for Man United fans, I would have preferred to get Grealish rather than Jadon Sancho, even though he's had a great season, hasn't he, with Borussia Dortmund. But, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he can't get into the side. He can't get into the England side. There's so many good players on the bench. I mean, they've got Rashford on the bench. They've got Sancho, you know, Foden, Mount, and, of course, Grealish, who's come on and has been excellent when he's come on as well. But, he just can't get in the side, Jadon Sancho. But he's had a great season for Borussia Dortmund, and I think it's what United need. It's a good sort of outside right, a right side of midfield. So we'll wait and see. I don't know how much more money the Glazers have or Ed Woodward will have to spend, but they certainly need more than just Sancho to try and compete with the likes of Liverpool and Man City next season, you know?
Certainly a move in the right direction for them anyway.
Sure. Well, I'm really excited about tonight. I mean, Ukraine have done marvellously well. I'm not expecting too much from them, but you never know. You just never know in football, do you?
No, you certainly don't. Before we leave the Euros, just a word on Portugal, Ken, who are our next opponents, of course, in the World Cup qualifiers in September. We may or may not face Ronaldo in that, who knows. But what you saw of them in the tournament, what did you make of them overall?
Yeah, I liked them. I thought they played really well as a team. I mean, a lot of great players, and I thought Ronaldo was really, really good. You know, he scored 5 goals, and I was disappointed that they went out, to be honest. But they played against a very, very good side in Belgium, you know. But I mean, for the Irish, I mean, there's great grass, you know, shoots of like confidence coming back into the team and something to look forward to with our own Irish team. And, you know, playing against Portugal, I mean, it will be a big step up, but, you know, a great opportunity for our own players to really sort of shine against a world-class side, like, you know.
OK, well, let's turn our attention now to what's happening here in terms of the golf, the Dubai Duty-Free Irish Open taking place at Mount Juliet. And the Irish doing fairly well so far there, including Rory McIlroy, who's on 500. He's primed to make a serious move today, would you think?
Yeah, you would have thought so. You know, he's been playing really well. And, I mean, it's such a beautiful place, Mount Juliet, as well, isn't it? It's such a wonderful setting. Himself and Larry, of course, are in there. I was still disappointed. Poor El Porrick Harrington didn't make the cut, didn't play so well. But, you know, I suppose he's got a lot of things on his mind with the Ryder Cup coming up as well. But it's great to have the Irish Open there back at Mount Juliet. It's a wonderful a wonderful place, a great golf course, played it many, many times. I'm sure all the players are enjoying the hospitality down there.
I mean, Lucas Herbert has certainly enjoyed a fantastic couple of days, hasn't he? Two-shot lead and 13 under par. It's some scoring after 2 days.
Yeah, exactly. But you'd love to see Rory, wouldn't you, really sort of make a charge and climb up that leaderboard and give, you know, hear that wonderful roar from the Irish support, because there's going to be huge crowds following them today, you know, and tomorrow, of course. So, a lot can happen over the weekend as well. But, yeah, the standard at golf now is just magnificent, isn't it? You know, but it'd be nice to see Rory or even Larry, you know, back on the winner's rostrum and give us something to cheer about.
Yeah, either or, of course, because it's a massive couple of weeks in the golf game. You have the Scottish Open coming up, and then, of course, you have the Open coming up as well, which Shane Lowry will be defending in a couple of weeks' time
Yeah, he's held on to that Claret Jug, hasn't he, for 2 years now.
Yeah. It'll be very hard for him to get back.
I think he's filled it up more times than the previous 100 champions of the British Open as well over the last couple of years. He won't want to give it back. I mean, you know, and it's great to have it. I mean, you know, winning up in, of course, Portrush was just magnificent for him, you know, and he'd be forever remembered for that. And it's wonderful. I mean, I know when I had the World Championship trophy myself on my mother's television in Renlagh Avenue, that when you're sort of giving it back, you don't want to give it back. You want to hold on to it. And I'm sure he will be the same. He'd be fighting tooth and nail to try and win it again. And that would be something special, you know. But he's been a great champion, Shane Lowry. He's a great character. He's a lovely lad, and it's great to see him doing so well, like, you know.
Yeah, and Hellas, he even seems to have been a renaissance in Offaly GAA since he got involved with them.
Yeah,
the
football
championship match last week, and the hurlers aren't doing so badly either.
And he's improved his singing as well, you know, because every pub he's gone to, he sang the fields of Elton Roy, so his voice is getting a bit better over the last year as well.
Just needs the golf to be a bit more consistent now. That might be more important. Rugby, of course, we're going to be spoiled over the next few weeks, Ken, with the Lions tour as well. Every cloud, of course, has a silver lining. We'll be talking to Shane Byrne about this a little bit later on in the programme, but what about Conor Murray getting the captaincy of the Lions?
Yeah, I mean it's a big task for him, isn't it? You know, it's a great honour though. You know, he's been a great servant for Ireland. He's been a great player, and you know, it's a great honour to captain the Lions, and it's a big task for him. You know, there's a lot of great players around him, so but I'm sure he'll do it justice, and he'll honour the captaincy very admirably. I'm sure he's got great experience, Conor, and you know, I wish him well. It's going to be a fantastic tour, and I'm looking forward to watching the matches, you know.
In the circles that you're mixing in over there, is there much talk about it, or is the sporting landscape just dominated by England in the
US? No, it's just everything is about the match tonight, about the Three Lions, and football is coming home. Every radio station you turn on, you know, Talk Sport or BBC, you know, 909, everything is... Everything is about the Euro, everything is about the team, everything is about Gareth Southgate, everything is about the selection of the players, who's he going to pick, what sort of formation. But I think it's fantastic. And I tell you what I'm really enjoying, Declan, as well. I'm loving Roy Keane, you know, Vieira and Gary Neville on ITV as well. I think their punditry has been, like, top quality.
You can't. Roy Keane is just pure box office.
Pure
box office. I mean, I might necessarily watch a game on the channel, but I'll watch the analysis just because he's on priceless. Especially
I thought it was a classic. I thought it was a classic when he was he was talking about the two English lads who spoke to the Billy Gilmore, the Scottish lad who eventually got COVID. So the two lads who had been speaking to him after the match when England beat Scotland for about 20 minutes, he says, what are they doing speaking to him for 20 minutes? He said, if I speak to my wife for more than 4 minutes or 5 minutes, that's enough, like, you know.
Moving on. Speaking of British legends, Andy Murray, of course, his Wimbledon dream has finally come to an end. But what an epic match he had the other night. Was it 20 past 10 or something it finished on centre court under the lights?
Yeah, I mean, he's been, unfortunately, poor old Andy Murray, he's been plagued with injuries, but he's had a wonderful career. You know, he's won Wimbledon. He won the gold medal, of course, at the Olympics, beating Federer, didn't he, at Wimbledon as well. You know, he's won a few Grand Slams. He's been a great servant, you know, for British tennis. And, you know, it's sad to see him because he's had that sort of hip injury. He had a hip operation. He's just not the same player he was, unfortunately, a few years ago. And, you know, when you see the likes of Federer and Nadal and Djokovic, even at their age, still at the top of the game, I mean, he was the fourth best player, you know, with those lads, and he was beating them, you know, in Grand Slams not so long ago. But unfortunately, you know, he's got this bad injury, and I don't think he'll ever recover. But look at, he's had a great career, you know, and he's almost like a saint over here, of course, in England for British tennis. He's been the flag bearer for a number of years now, and indeed his brother has, you know, in the doubles. But it's sad to see, but as I said, he's done really well over his career. He can be very proud of what he's done.
Yeah, Conor Nyland will be talking to me a little bit later in the show. What's happened so far. But the machine...
I'm looking forward to seeing Federer again, you know, because, yeah, I mean, he's my favourite, you know. He's like the Ronnie O'Sullivan, isn't he? He's like a ballet dancer, you know, when he's playing tennis. He's just so gracious and he's just so good. And what is he now, 39 years of age, and he's still playing at the top of his game. I know he's had a few injuries as well, but... I mean, he's so great. I've been lucky to see him play live, and it's just amazing to see. And Djokovic and Nadal as well. That triumvirate has been fantastic over the last 10 or 15 years. But Federer is without doubt my favourite, you know.
So the second week, of course, is coming up, the business end of the championships over there. So, Ken, who's going to be celebrating in the men's and ladies' singles, in your view, at the end of next week?
I don't know. I think it's going to be hard to see past Djokovic, but... I'm hoping a fairy tale of Federer. He's won it 8 times, you know. Can he win it the 9th? Probably not. Djokovic looks the strongest. Maybe one of the younger players might spring a surprise. You know, I'm not quite sure whether they will or not, but Djokovic, for me, looks the strongest. In the women's, I don't know. I mean, I was sad to see poor El Serena slip and having to pull out, and she burst into tears, and that was quite emotional for her. But I don't know who's going to win. I think that the ladies on the other side is very, very open, you know. But it'll be interesting to hear what Conor Nyland has to say.
Yes, indeed. Looking forward to the chat with Conor. Mm. Just on the racing game, how's our
Dublin team doing, Declan? That's what I want to know. How are they going to do again this year? And who's going to be the closest to them?
Well, it's an interesting question. That journey starts, of course, tomorrow against Wexford down in Chadwick's Wexford Park. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on the show. It's fantastic, I think, to have championship back at the right time of the year. Last year, it was from October to December. It was very eerie. There was no crowds and all the rest of it. It's a little bit different this year, thankfully. How will we do? I'd be very optimistic. But in terms of closest challengers, I suppose you really'd have to say Kerry, wouldn't you? To be honest. Can Mayo come from the West and regroup? That'll be an interesting one to watch as well. But looking forward.
Going to go.
How do you think it's going to go yourself?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long they can keep going on, but they keep churning out great players, you know, Dublin, and it's just fantastic to see, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they start. I think, you know, how far Kerry will come on, or Mayo, or even Donegal, or maybe one of the teams, you know, from the six counties, maybe might come through. I don't know, but Dublin for me are the strongest. It's great. It's great to see them churning out so many, and of course, it's great to see, you know, the football in such a healthy state as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, our hurlers are out this afternoon as well against Galway at 2 o'clock in Croke Park. So we wish them the very best of luck with that. Sean Lane, the former Dublin minor and under 21 manager, will be in studio a little bit later to discuss that. So, Ken, finally, before we let you go, what celebrity pals are you going to watch the game with tonight?
Well, I'm playing in I'm doing a little snooker thing in Hull tonight, actually. So I'm going to be we're starting at about 5:30. So hopefully we'll be finished just before 8. I took the money off Stephen Hendry and Mark Williams down at the 210 course down at Celtic Manor the other day. So, I mean, it's like trying to get blood out of a stone out of the boat with them, but managed to do it on the 18th. So a little bit of bragging rights there, but enjoying the good weather, Declan, enjoying a bit of golf, and can't wait for the Euros. I'll be interested to hear what Alan Cawley's going to say about England tonight. And, of course, my 130-1 outsider, the Ukraine as well, and Shevchenko's men. So for me, I'll be quietly shouting for the Ukraine tonight for sure.
Yeah, that'll be the first question on the list next week. You can be absolutely sure that, Ken. What happened here, 130-1? Well, I suppose most people might be hopeful that you're still in the race after tonight's game, and we'll just have to Ken, pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning on the show. Enjoy
my
the football
pleasure
tonight and for the rest of the week as well.
All right. Thanks, Declan.
Fair play to you.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ken Doherty there on the line from Milton Keynes, giving his perspective on a wide range of sports. They're always great to have Ken on the line with us. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. It's just coming up to 25 minutes past 9 on a grey, misty Saturday morning in Dublin's Docklands. Hopefully it'll brighten up for the hurling and that later on this afternoon. Right, we're going to turn our attention now to golf, and of course the Dubai Irish Open is taking place at Mount Juliet this week. It starts on Thursday and finishes tomorrow. Delighted now to be joined on the line by Deirdre Smith, one of Ireland's leading golf amateurs, to talk to us about that and other events around the golfing world as well. Very good morning to you, Deirdre.
Morning. Good, Declan. Good to be on to you this morning, especially on the Irish Open weekend.
Pleasure to have you on, indeed, and fantastic to have the Irish Open, as Ken was saying, back at Mount Juliet there again, and going very well from an Irish perspective so far down there, Deirdre.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Herbert has kind of, you know, had two great scores. He overcame a double bogey to kind of settle the nerves and finished at minus 13. You know, you have McIlroy and Lowry there at 5 under. They're a long way back, but you know, it depends on what the leaders do today, really. If they come back towards the field, which could happen, or if they just stay where they are and McIlroy and Lowry have a good day, you know, they could be within touch and distance. You know, we'd love an Irish, we'd love a fairy tale, but it's a long shot, I think, at this stage, but you never know. You know, it's a pity Harrington missed the cut. And you know, Colin Moriarty, who had a great first round, 6-4 under, unfortunately missed it by one, shooting 74. And, you know, Niall Carney and Moynihan and Caldwell and Dunn all missed the cut. But it's good to see Gray McDowell. He turned it around. He put a new putter in his bag. He said it saved him yesterday. And it's good to see him making the cut as well. And because, you know, golf is a lonely place when you're not playing well, and McDowell has been in the doldrums for a long time. So, you know, you never know, a round like that can turn things around. So, look, there's still four Irish in it. And, of course, the headliners, McIlroy and Lowry, are still there. It's a pity they're not playing together today. I thought they might be because they're both at 5 under. That would be that would garner some galleries. But, look, we'll see. It'll take something special for one of them to win it. But, look, they're special players, both of them, and they're major champions, and you know they're the class players in the field. But you know, sometimes that brings pressure too. So we'll see.
Yeah, to be one of the honoured ones who has lucky enough to have tickets for today and indeed tomorrow down there is a fantastic venue, Mount Juliet. Rory McIlroy playing alongside Matthew Jordan in today's third round, and Shane Lowry is partnered by South Africa's Justin Harding. Both Irish golfers, as you say, are on 5 under. Cormac Sharman, by the way, made the cut as well, which is great to see. But Lucas Herbert, Deirdre, has he got the mettle to hold on? It's a fantastic opening 2 days, 2-shot lead at the moment on 13 under.
Yeah, look, it's a bit like Niall Carney last week. Niall Carney was leading in the European Tour event last week, and look, he didn't sort of look. I don't know. You can surmise on the sidelines, and you can say he didn't hold his nerve, or he didn't. You don't know. You're not there. You're not the person in the ring. But he did finish. He had a great finish in a top 10 finish. It would have been nice to have a top 5 finish. But look, you know, Lucas Herbert these are lofty heights for him. So it'll be interesting to see. Today is a big day for him. If he holds on today, and I felt that with Niall Carney last week too, that if he had handled the Saturday, that he may have been able to go on the Sunday and do it. But today is a big day for him. And look, the battle is in the mind at this stage. It's not on the golf course. And that's where you have to win the battle. And if you do that, everything takes care of itself. So today will be a big day for him.
I mean, you know better than anybody else, when golf is going well, it's a fantastic game. But when it's going the other way, just trying to rescue it can be an absolute nightmare at times.
Yeah, look, you tend to try too hard. You know what you can do. And then if that's not happening, maybe, you know, you start to maybe doubt yourself a little bit. And, you know, the margins are so fine in the strike and in the hit and in everything. And then a little bit of a luck or bad luck or, you know, so, you know, there's just so many vagaries in golf that you have to handle and you have to manage, and they're all managed in the mind. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, indeed. The best of luck indeed to Rory and the rest of the Irish contingent down there.
Sure. Julia. And it's great, as you said, and as Ken said, it's marvellous to have it back and have crowds at it. I mean, it's super.
Yeah, normality. That's called a relative normality.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look ahead or look across the pond now and the LPGA Tour and Leona Maguire and her performance last week. Absolutely brilliant performance from her. Surely not too long before she lands a major prize over there, Deirdre.
Yeah, sure. Look, you know, Reddy and I talk about it regularly. It's not a matter, and I'm probably repeating myself, it's not a matter of if, it's when. And she's had three marvellous weeks. She's finished, you know, she finished top 15 there in that major in the KPMG last week. She was only four shots being fifth. That's just one stroke around. That's the way she'd be looking at it. Now, you know, Nelly Korda and Lizette Salas, they blew away the field at 19 under and 16 under, and the next to that was 10 under. Now, that's very unusual in a major. Normally, it's much more bunched than that. And Nelly Korda is just on that hot streak at the moment, and it's hard to catch her. But I don't. Leona won't be looking to that. They're kind of outliers. She won't be looking to 19 under and 16 under. She'll be looking at 10 under was third. I was four under. That's only six shots. That's a 1.5 shots a round. You know, it sounds not a lot, but, you know, it is a lot in golf. But she'll also be looking to see where she could have tightened up. And, you know, she was second in the previous week to Nelly Korda, and she pushed her right to the limit and right to the end. So, you know, it's marvellous for golf. We've talked about it again over the last few weeks. She's just making that incremental improvement week on week. She's having a well-deserved week off this week. And then she has a really busy schedule. She's two LPGA events, and then she travels to France for the Evian Masters, which is another major.
Well, and then she, yeah. What does a golfer do on a week off, Jenny? Do you just watch television? Do you go for walks, or what would you do generally? Because it must be very difficult to take your mind off it.
Yeah, look, good question, Declan. A week off doesn't mean a week without the clubs in your hand. You know, she will be working hard every day on little things that she knows she needs to work on, but she won't be in the pressure cooker of an event. She'll take that pressure off herself and that pressure off to perform, and she'll just hone in on some of the things that perhaps she has noticed in the last few weeks that need a bit of work. And she'll do that work with her pro or whoever her team around her. She'll have lots of rest and recuperation too. She'll do other things in terms of, you know, sightseeing or, you know, massage or, you know, all those things that need to be done, or any little injury niggles or whatever. But it doesn't mean a week without a club in her hand, that's for sure. She may have one or two days without that, but it won't be with no club in her hand, that's for sure. But, you know, that's what I would imagine. That's what she do. That's what will happen on her week off.
Okay, fair enough. Finally, Deirdre, we can't let it pass without a word on Seamus Power and his performance last week on the tour.
Yeah, look, again, we talk about this every week. He doesn't really get the credit he deserves because we have so many global stars in golf, and we have so many people doing well, and, you know, like Rory and Lowry and even Harrington and captain of the Ryder Cup, and then Leona making such headlines on the LPGA. you know, Seamus Power kind of gets lost in the conversation. But he's three off the lead again this week. He shot 66-71. He's playing with the top people all the time. He's got to be seeing that, you know, there's not much difference between him and them. And I think he's going to land a PGA event. I really, really do. I mean, he's hanging around that leaderboard week in, week out, and he's going through it the hard way. He's qualifying on Mondays. He's getting into the tournament, and he obviously really wants it, you know. And if somebody really wants it, they're going to do whatever they can to make it. And I think he's going to land one. I really do. I really do. And I hats off to him, because he's plugging away there quietly in the background. You know, obviously not getting, he is getting some attention, but I think he deserves a bit more for what he's doing.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more.
You know,
it certainly is a golf fan's mecca over the next few weeks, isn't it? What with the Irish Open this week, Scottish Open, then of course the main one, the Open itself, coming up in a few weeks' time. Deirdre Smith, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Great to get your insight into the wonderful world of golf, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Declan.
Thank you very much indeed.
Okay.
To Deirdre Smith. Always insightful, fantastic slot on the show every week for our golf aficionados, and we have many of them, I can tell you. Right, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. It's just coming up to 25 minutes now to 10 on this greyish Saturday morning in the capital. Stay with us. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking to former tennis professional Conor Nyland about the ongoing situation at Wimbledon. Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. Declan Drake sitting in for Reggie Corrigan on a well-earned break this week, with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. And as usual, you can get in touch with the show. We'd love to hear your opinions. Text us 087-1155-777. Our WhatsApp is 087-188-1068. And all, of course, social media, Facebook Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. And a message in here from Kevin in Drimna. He says, looking forward to the chat with Conor on Wimbledon and seeing who he thinks will emerge victorious at the end of next week. Well, your timing is absolutely perfect, because we now are going to speak to Conor Nyland, former professional tennis player, on the events that are happening in SW19 this week, and indeed looking ahead to the business end of the championships next week. A very good morning to you, Conor.
Morning, Declan. How are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. So listen, what would be wrong with you in the sporting weekend that we have coming up across the board, eh?
Yeah, there's been a lot of flicking back and forth, even for me, to the football. I've been kind of leaning towards the tennis, but still getting a little bit of the soccer in as well, so it's been great.
Well, having missed the championships last year, it's been a wonderful first week so far, and it was to a certain extent too, obviously, for Andy Murray. He had that epic match the other night, which finished at something like 20 past 10 under the lights and on centre court. But his dream came to an end last night, Conor, as he lost in straight sets to Shapovalov.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did well. I was saying when I was on the show last week, I felt like a third or a fourth round would be great. A great performance from Andy. Just, you know, he's conscious of the fact that he hasn't played any matches really this year. He played a couple of matches in the warm event at Queens, but has barely played since March. And then not to mention the fact that he's got a metal hip. So he hadn't played here since, I think, 2017. So for him to get a big match like he had in the second round, a best of five set under the lights, as you say, I think it would have given him a lot of confidence that he can physically do it. But I think he was disappointed probably with how he backed that up last night. I thought Shapovalov actually played very well and didn't really give Murray a lot of chance to sort of get into the match. But at the same time, Murray, from where he's come from as a former world number one, you know, I'm sure he would have liked to have tried to have maybe snuck a set and made a bit more of a match and get the crowd into it a bit more, and he wasn't able to do that. But I think all things considered, he'll look back on the last week as a big success that he's been able to mix it with the guys in the top 100 and top 50 again.
Yeah, I think it's been great to see him back on the big stage again. He's worked so hard indeed to get back there, but not like his German opponent the other night, who had two marathon matches, hadn't he?
Yeah, so he qualified, so he won three rounds in qualifying, and that last round of qualifying would have been best of five sets, and then They've now changed the rules at Wimbledon, where they used to have the final, the fifth set used to be, you know, you have to be ahead by two games to win the match. That's where we had our 70-68 with Isner and Mahou 10 years ago. And they've actually stopped that now because they feel like if the matches go on too long, the players are just not able to play a couple of days later. So they now have a tiebreak at 12-all in the fifth, and Ahti won that one 13. So he won 13-12 the round before. And then to go out and play another five-setter was impressive. And he was actually up two sets to love at the French Open against Zverev, another top five player. So Ahti is 150 in the world, but just shows you the depth of men's tennis that he's able to go out and compete with, you know, with Grand Slam champions and guys who've been, who are in the top five. So I thought it was a great performance for him, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of moving into the top 75 in the world in the next few months.
I, for one, am missing Rafa Nadal. I think he's an outstanding player, and his absence from this tournament is badly missed. But two men who will be there or thereabouts come next week are Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic. And I know that you're leaning towards Djokovic and perhaps come out as the overall winner, Conor.
Yeah, it's really hard to see past Novak. I think he's come through impressively the first couple of rounds, how he did lose his very first set. Against the talented British guy Jack Draper first round, but he played Dennis Kudla from the US last night, and Kudla played about as well as he possibly can, I think, through the kitchen sink at him. But Novak's just so good at sort of soaking up pressure, absorbing pace and neutralising when he's in defensive positions, and he's just so hard to beat over best of five sets. You might, you know, you might see him lose occasionally during the year in a best of three set match, But the best of five set format is just it's just so hard to hit through him consistently for 3 hours. So really going to be really tough to beat. And then Federer's got a really interesting match today against British player Cameron Norrie. Federer was lucky really to win his first round. He was down against Adrian Mannarino 2-1, and Mannarino slipped and had a bad fall and had to retire a couple of games later. And so Federer again, you know, he's nearly 40 and he's into the third round. So and Norrie's got a similar game to Mannarino. He's a lefty. He kind of nudges it around a bit, but he's got a pretty big forehand. Certainly, he's being a lot more aggressive the last couple of years and has had a great year. So I could see Norrie winning that match. I wouldn't put him as the favourite, but Federer I think could, and it'd be really interesting to see what the crowd do today, because obviously Federer is so loved at Wimbledon. But then Norrie's British player, and I wouldn't actually be surprised to see the crowd leaning a bit more towards Federer, the cheering stakes, than Norrie, which will be interesting to see. So that will be up, I think, second match on centre today. So I think that's probably the pick of the day's matches.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that, all right. Looking at the women's side of things, Conor, it's difficult to look past Ash Barty, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Barty she's obviously world number one, but they've frozen the rankings the last couple of years with the pandemic. So she's probably not the form player in the world right now. The form player is arguably Krejcikova, who won Roland Garros and is through to the third round quite quietly. Like, she hasn't been put on a show court yet. Yeah, so Barty kind of, you know, she's the world number one, but with the pandemic, they've had a freeze on the rankings. So the foreign player is arguably Krejcikova from Czech Republic, who won Roland Garros singles and doubles a couple of weeks ago, and she hasn't been put on a show court yet, which is a little bit disappointing, I would have thought, from her perspective. And then you've got the Roland Garros winner from last year, Iga Swiatek from Poland, who's won junior Wimbledon. So she's looking good. She won her match yesterday 6-1, 6-love. So she's looking impressive. It'll be tough. I sometimes think with Barty, she just looks a little bit anxious sometimes when she gets out on those big courts. She's won a major, she won Roland Garros, but I sometimes just feel like she maybe doesn't enjoy the biggest matches on the biggest stages as much as she probably needs to. So that's my only worry for Ashley Barty. I'd love to see her win it. I think she's good enough to, but sometimes I wonder, does the occasion get in the way with her a small bit? So that'll be interesting to see that play out over the next week. And they've got Britain have a very good young player called Emma Raducanu, who's got who's first up, I think, on number one court today at about 12 o'clock. So she's I think she's going to be potentially a top 30 player in the next couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see her play again today.
I'm just writing down predictions as we go along. Ken Doherty has the Ukraine at 130-1 for the Euros. Good luck with that.
Oh.
I think your reasoning is more sound, Conor, on the tennis. So Djokovic and Barty, 1-2 next week?
Yeah, well, I said I kind of lean towards Barty with Reggie last week, so I won't bail on her. I won't bail on her. I'll keep going. But as I said last week, I think the women's at the moment is just so hard to predict. There's literally 15, 20 players who could win it. And again, with the best of three set format, it throws up a lot more upsets. You know, player can have a bad 45 minutes and they're in big trouble. So, yeah, I'll go with Barty. And Swiatek had not looked good in the grass court event in Eastbourne. She'd struggled, but I guess she was just finding her feet in grass and she's looked quite impressive. So I'd also have a strong watch out for Swiatek.
Okay. Well, I'm writing this down as you're speaking, Connor. And
you can have me back next week.
This is a pleasure as always to have you on the show. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us this morning on Dublin's Talking Sport. And enjoy the rest of the week at SW19.
Thanks a million, Declan. Cheers.
Okay, we're having some technical issues here this morning. Apologies about that, and particularly to Andrew Blair-White, who was on the line to us as well. Andrew, we haven't too much time left. We'll just get straight into your lucky 15 for this afternoon. I noticed that three of them are from Bellewstown, but your first pick is actually from Sandown.
Yeah, indeed. I'll run through it very quickly. The main race at Sandown is the Carl Eclipse, the 3:35 race. I quite like a day in this. There's been a bit of rain around overnight over in London, which will really suit this horse. He's probably the solid option of the three. It's a very good race, just four runners. I think he might have a chance, even though he's the third favourite. And then over in Bellewstown, as you say, the 5:35, probably the feature race on the card, really competitive handicap hurdle. Winner takes it all for Joseph O'Brien, who's been in good form recently. Simon Torrance takes the ride. His best price, 8-1 available out there this morning. I think he's got a very good each-way chance. The 6:05 at Bellewstown, a mare's maiden hurdle. Denise Foster's horses seem to have turned a corner recently. She's had a fair few winners up in Perth and Ayr, those sort of tracks in Scotland. And she saddles Say Goodbye in this. Rachel Blackmore takes the ride for Rob Corr. Ran a good race the last time at Kilbeggan, came second. Looked to be a fair bit of promise. Tough, she would win a maiden hurdle after that, and she steps up in trip, which should suit. She's ranked 2-1. And then finally, the 6:35, one of these conditional jockey handicap hurdles, very tricky races. But Paul Nolan has Saga Aravis in this. Owen Walsh takes off £2. Ran quite an eye-catching race last time at Navan when given an awful lot to do. Finished fifth over 2 miles, steps back up to 2.5 miles. And I think he might have a better chance than a price of 11-1, I would suggest. So two at smaller prices, two at each rate prices. And hopefully between the four of them, we might find a winner or two.
Yes, Dean, of course, and the main race, I suppose, is the Carl Eclipse Stakes at Sandown today. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, indeed. It's an excellent race. Four runners, so it's low on quantity but high on quality. Aidan O'Brien has St. Mark's Basilica in there, who's won a few races over in France this year. Very hard to quantify the level of that form. He takes on Mishriff, who won, obviously, the £8 million race over in Doha earlier this year, and then won at Maidan as well after John Gosden. So he returns to England to try and prove that he can do it on home soil. Aidan O'Brien takes one over, and obviously my selection, Dave, who's won twice down in Australia at Group 1 level and has won twice in England at Group 1 level. So it's a really, really good race. And certainly if you're stuck for something to do at around 3:30, I'd certainly tune in because it should be an absolute cracker.
Super stuff. Andrew, I'm sorry we haven't got more time to talk to you this morning. We will put that lucky 15 up on our social media channels. Thanks very much indeed for taking our call and apologies there for the technical difficulties.
No worries at all, Declan. See you next week.
Thank you very much indeed there to Andrew Blair-White of the Racing Post. Now, coming up in the second hour of the programme, after the news at 10, we'll have rugby with Shane Byrne. We'll be talking to Sean Lane, the former Dublin minor and under-21 hurling manager, about the championship coming up this afternoon for Dublin. And talking to Seanie McCarthy, two-time All-Ireland winner with Cork, about Cork and Limerick. And we'll also be talking as well to Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call. We'll have an extended look back at the European Championship games during the course of the week, looking ahead indeed to next week as well, and coming up to the final stages of the championships. So stay tuned. We'll be back after the news at 10. Good morning and welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Bit of bonus George Michael for you on a Saturday morning there, my friends. Technical issues here. Anyway, we'll plough on as best we can between now and 11 o'clock. Coming up In this hour, she's going to be shortly talking to former Ireland Leinster and Lions hooker Shane Byrne on all things rugby. We'll be talking to Sean Lane in studio about Dublin's championship clash with Galway in the Senior Hurling Championship this afternoon, and look back at last week's victory over Antrim as well. Andy, the under 20 All-Ireland final coming up next week between Dublin and Cork. Alan Cawley then will be on the line for the final part of the programme. A special soccer extended edition today. We'll have a great look back at the Euros during the week, and indeed what's coming up next week as well, as well of course as the SSE Electricity League action from last night. But now we are going to turn our attention to rugby, and a fantastic period of time coming up for followers of the Oval Ball game, of course, with the Lions tour to South Africa. To talk to us now about that, amongst other things in the rugby world, as I say, is Shane Byrne. So a very good morning to you, Shane.
How are you doing?
Sure, not bad at all, sir. Not bad at all. As I said to the other guests earlier on, sure, what would be wrong with you on weekends like this with so much quality sport to look forward to?
There certainly is. There's a loads going on.
Absolutely. You want more than one television, that's for sure, in the house.
Correct.
Let's talk about what happened during the week first, if we can, Shane. And the under-20s, they took on England in the Cardiff Arms Park and unfortunately came out on the wrong side of a 24-15 scoreline. What were your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, listen, I tell you, it's the end of an amazing run. I don't know if people realise, but the under-20s have been absolutely blazing a trail in fixtures in recent times. And, you know, it was nearly, I think they were going for the third successive Triple Crown. They had had something like 11 straight victories. You know, absolutely amazing. The talent coming through is brilliant, but unfortunately, it didn't work out. 24-15 to England. They were just proved too strong on the day. A few errors made by the Irish, particularly in defence. But it was something that, you know, it was unexpected. This England team have had a few good results, but nothing great. You thought with the momentum that the Irish team had had together. But still, there's plenty of stars to look at. Nathan Doak, you know, Jamie Osborne, all these kids, we're going to see. These names will be known to us week in, week out in years to come.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see the pool of talent coming through, all right, to be available to the Irish senior management in years to come. And speaking of the Irish senior team, back in test match action this afternoon at the Aviva Stadium, Shane, when they take on Japan, who of course played the Lions in that warm-up game last week. And Joey Carberry makes his welcome return after 2 years away today.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah, he's had a real roller coaster of injuries. It's been something that has absolutely plagued him, and we're good to see him back. Not quite setting the world alight as much as we had hoped when he comes back, but he's playing well enough to deserve his chance here now.
And turning attention then to the Lions, they had that expensive game, if you like, against the Japanese last week, losing their captain Alwyn Jones. But every cloud has a silver lining, and Conor Murray has stepped up to the plate. I was reading somewhere this morning before we came in, Shane, about the fact that the Lions squad had seemed to have a vote amongst themselves for captain and came up with the name of Owen Farrell. So how does that make things for Conor?
Well, it's not quite like that. They pick leaders and for different things throughout the team, throughout the tour, squad, things like that. It wasn't a vote for captain. It was a vote for senior players and who would be in charge of that senior player committee, for instance, and that they would, if there were any issues, that they would sort it out. Yeah, a lot of people thought Owen Farrell would have been a front runner for this. Stuart Hogg as well, captaincy material as well. There's a lot of experience of captain. And Conor Murray really came out of left field. Nobody expected that, to be truthful. He's deputised as captain a couple of times, but nothing major, you know. But he's very integral to the team. I thought he was nailed on for a test spot anyway, but he is a guy who gets on with everybody, and that's so important within a line structure, because you are putting four sets of players together and trying to make a team out of it. And it's very important to have a captain who everybody is, you know, doesn't have a problem with, gets on with, and respects. And listen, he's a third-time tourist with the Lions. His experience counts for itself. And, yeah, I think Gatland has pulled off another surprise, but another good choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Wish Conor every success indeed. It's a tremendous honour initially to go on the Lions tour, as you have been lucky enough to have done in the past, but then to be named as skipper is an outstanding achievement. So well done to him on that. Tremendous Irish contingent, of course, involved in this touring party. Shane, in this lead up now, when you're actually down there in South Africa, I mean, what kind of things are going through your mind as a player? Obviously, you're trying to impress Scotland if you're given an opportunity in the early games.
Yeah, that's it. Like, the thing with the Lions tour is that you're basically on trial all the time. It's how you get on with people on and off the park. But there's no doubt about it. It's the minutes you get on the pitch, they're the ones that count. And that's why it was good that the Irish guys all got a big run out against Japan last week. And a lot of guys put their hands up, you know, who still mightn't have been whispered in test circles, but like, you know, Jack Conan, for instance, had a superb game. Tadhg Barr, Bundy Aki, you know, I think Henshaw's nailed on. I think the 13 jerseys is his to lose. But I think, you know, you've got to just make sure that every chance you get out the park, that you're noticed, that you did well, you didn't do anything wrong, because you've got to just get your name, get mentioned enough in reports so that Gatland is watching and you're ticking the boxes. Because the one thing we don't know is what exactly Gatland is looking for. You know, he will have given them a very strict game plan, and he'll tell them, under these circumstances, I want you to do X, Y, and Z, and he'd be looking for that as well. And it's those small things that make the difference and can explain a lot of the selections the way it goes.
And the Springboks haven't been without their difficulties either, it must be said, in relation to this dreadful COVID-19 pandemic as well. They've had their preparations disrupted as well.
Oh, massively so. Yeah, it's going to be very difficult for them. They haven't played a test. Like, they played yesterday. It's the first time that they played since the World Cup final. You know what I mean? It's incredible. And, you know, and Japan weren't much better either. You know, they had, I think they played twice since. And that's unfortunately the world we're in with COVID. They won't have the perfect preparation, but they're in camp for weeks now. You know, they will be, by the time the tests come around, they'll be a well-honed machine. And, you know, that the Lions are getting more, you know, competitive rugby, they should take that opportunity, because, you know, South Africa, no matter what the preparation, is going to be a hell of a challenge.
Oh, it certainly is, and one I'm sure that you just can't wait for it to get started.
Yeah, correct. It's obviously a little bit later this year because of the way the season has gone, but yeah, look, the buzz is still there. It's going to be unusual with no crowds and very few people out of it, but still, look, we're getting used to that. The Lions is still something special, and I think it always will be.
Yeah, it's the pinnacle, really, isn't it, for any rugby player to be selected as a British and Irish line. Are you still... What is your thinking, Shane? Are you happy that... Obviously, you're happy it's going ahead, full stop, but would it have been preferable to have had it, say, in the British Isles with some spectators at it? Or does it really matter?
No, I would have preferred it postponed until 2022. I think that would have been the best thing to do. You know, yes, it would have jumbled around with tours and things like that and upset the international calendar a bit, but I think it's as a standalone entity, it deserves, you know, a bit more. I think that it should take priority over things, and I would have postponed it until 2022, but look, it's going ahead, it's very important, and you know, it's still going to be a hell of a spectacle.
Yes, it certainly is. Before we let you go, let's just turn our attention briefly back to this afternoon, Ireland-Japan at the Olympic Stadium, and the start of the World Cup phase, if you like, for Andy Farrell and co. He'll be looking for big performances all over the park from many different players to make his job of selecting a squad more difficult for the Six Nations and that coming up next year.
Yeah, like, we all would have loved the scene, just a purely, you know, guys getting a lot of experience and a lot of younger lads getting in, but he's had to pick a mixture of both, because you got to remember that the last time we played these guys, we lost them at the World Cup, and you know, this is a serious challenge. And we saw that Japan, you know, for a team that hadn't played in a long time, when they played against the Lions, you know, they didn't play some bad rugby, and they're well ready for it. So it's a big challenge for Ireland. Like, and people have got to think, you know, if they're thinking any different, they've got to change their thinking, because this is very, very important that Ireland do what needs to be done. They need to get control up front. A back row have to have an absolutely superb game. Great to see Caelan Doris back in there again. But, you know, be under no illusion, this is a big challenge today.
Yeah, looking forward to 1 o'clock, I think, is the kick-off time there.
It is 1 o'clock kick-off, the early one.
Super. Shane, pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Enjoy this afternoon and indeed the Lions matches as well over the next few weeks.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Take care. Pleasure there to talk to Shane Byrne, former Leinster Ireland and indeed Lions hooker as well. Looking forward to that. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Just before we go to a commercial break, I just want to give you the Lucky 15, which by the way will be up on our social media platforms quite soon. Three of them were from Belliustown, but the first one was from Sandown, the 3.35 Abbey BB at 3-1. The 5.35 at Belliustown winner takes it all at 8-1. The 6.05 Say Goodbye at 3-1. And finally from Belliustown, the 6.35 Seja Aravis, hope I pronounced that correctly, 11-1 shot. So I don't know what you'd get for that, but the best of luck with it anyway. Okay, Dublin's Talking Sport, Sunshine 106.8. We're going to be back after this commercial break with Gaelic Games. Stay with us. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Declan Drake with you here until 11 o'clock on the programme, sitting in for Reggie Corrigan today, who's having a well-earned break. Okay, we're going to turn our attention now to Gaelic Games, but before that, again, to a couple of people who just missed the Lucky 15 there just before the break, we'll give it to you again. 3.35 at Sandown, Abbey BB at 3-1, 5.35 at Belliustown. Winner takes it all, 8-1 shot. 6.05 also at Belliustown is Say Goodbye at 3-1. And finally there is 6.35 is Seja Aravis, who is priced at 11-1. So the best of luck with that. All those details will be on our social media platforms very, very shortly indeed. Right, we're going to turn our attention now to Gaelic Games. And it's championship time in the month of July. Although looking out the window of our studio here in Dublin city centre this morning, not looking too great at all. But hopefully it'll brighten up over the course of the morning and into the afternoon. The Dublin senior hurlers will be playing Galway this afternoon in the semi-final of the Leinster Championship at Croke Park. 2 o'clock start there. We'll be looking ahead to that in a moment. But I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Sean Lane, who is the former Dublin minor and, as it was then, under 21 hurling boss, proud Ballantyre St John's club man, Sean. So a very good morning to you, Sean. Welcome to the programme.
Morning, Declan.
How are you today?
Very good.
Good. Looking forward to a feast of hurling, no doubt, over the weekend.
Absolutely.
Great. Right, well, before we look ahead to Galway at Croke Park this afternoon, which, by the way, was switched from O'Moore Park in Portlaoise, of course, earlier in the week. Get your thoughts on that shortly. The victory over Antrim last week, it was important to win the game, and they did that in some style, it must be said too.
Absolutely, Declan. 3.31 is a tremendous score to put up against Antrim, who probably would come from the, you know, the lower of the Division 1 teams, but having said that, had a smashing league campaign, drew at Wexford, beat Clare, and you know, had really, really good form, and beat Laois as well. On the day, I suppose, Dublin were, after 15 or 20 minutes, were fantastic. I mean, the ball winning of Danny Sutcliffe in the half-forward line was absolutely tremendous. And it's not every day that you have a full forward line of Keane O'Sullivan, also Ronan Hayes and Keane Boland. Each one of them contributed a goal apiece from play. So that's a tremendous thing. And the reason I'm mentioning that is one of the last famous nights we had in Parnell Park was against Galway. I think Dublin put up 3.19 that night, and Galway got 24 points. So looking forward to the Galway game, yeah, goals will be important. Yeah. But I think 3.31 was a tremendous score for Dublin, yeah, to put up. A lot of things went right. So confident enough going into this afternoon.
You mentioned Ronan Hayes there, the Kilmacud Crokes club man. He was impressive at different stages of the league in getting goals, which was a little bit of a problem for Dublin before that. They scored 3 last week as well, which would have pleased Matty Kenny no end.
There's no doubt about that, and probably Limerick have the only one that have a formula where they can get 30 or 32 points and actually win a game scoring without goals. But I don't think that this Dublin team will outpoint the three or four top teams in the country. So goals will definitely be important. I think that Ronan Hayes has height, he has physique, he has speed. He strikes off both left and right, and he has an appetite to go for goal when he gets possession one on one. So I'm looking forward to watching him today. But he'd be the better fresh air in the full forward line, to be honest with you. And I think Keane O'Sullivan, who notched a lovely goal, a fantastic little hand pass by Ream McBride the last day as well, is looking exciting in there as well.
And of course, it's a full forward line without the services of Eamon Trollier Dillon, who we announced last week, unfortunately, is missing the season.
And a big loss, Trollier will be, yeah.
It would have been pressure on the Dublin management. It's year three for Matty Kenny coming in this year, and it would have been weighing heavily on his shoulders that game against Antrim last week, because the potential, Sean, was for a banana skin in that game. So he'll be very relieved as well as pleased to have negotiated the hurdle the way that his team did.
He will be, but I suppose, to be fair to him, he's got the job on the back of winning two club All-Irelands with Cool at both Leinster and All-Ireland, which was fantastic, but probably took over Dublin Hurling when it was at a trough, so it took a while to build it back up. He made no secret of the fact that even in this league campaign he was playing, you know, looking at all types of players. I mean, he looked at Andrew Dunphy and Paddy Smith as the cornerback, and I think he's made the right decision there coming up with Paddy, because Andrew will have the side game the following weekend in the under 20. So he's had a look at players. He's had Keane O'Sullivan tried, he's brought him in as well. The league, you know, fine, we won two, we lost three. You know, let's see. Answering your question, I think he was under a little bit of pressure. He'll be under a little bit of pressure again this afternoon. But all in all, we're in the Leinster semi-final, we're in Croke Park, we're there with Dublin, Galway, Kilkenny, Wexford. That's where Dublin Hurling wants to be, and I'm looking forward to a really, really good performance this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
If you're going to win championships, you're going to win them in Croke Park. So the game has been switched from O'More Park in Portlaoise to Croke Park this afternoon, along with the Wexford Kilkenny game afterwards. So tremendous afternoon's entertainment and prospect for the 8,000 fortunate people who will be there this afternoon. But you'll be happy enough with that switch to Croke Park?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as you said, winning a Leinster final at Croke Park's the place to do it, and I think, you know, the crowd, I think, is a fantastic thing to have. 8,000 brings a small bit of extra atmosphere to it. Playing, as I said, the top four teams in Leinster, playing back to back in front of a small crowd, bit of atmosphere. Look, the size of the pitch, bigger than most, get used to the bounce of the ball. It'll be a very, very tough game now this afternoon for Dublin. Indeed, it'll be tough for Kilkenny and Wexford as well. But let's hope they get across the line. I mean, I couldn't leave the display against Antrim without mentioning Owen O'Donnell at fullback. I mean, if he was in any other county, he'd be the county fullback in each of them. He's an absolutely tremendous player, and great to have him in the side.
Yes, tremendous talent all over that team. Absolutely. Facing Galway this afternoon, as we say, from 2 o'clock. Galway were in the other division in the group, and if they win this afternoon, they will, and Kilkenny can win it in the, they'll meet each other obviously in the Leinster final, but will double up as a league final as well. Many people, Sean, are of the opinion that Galway are one of the best equipped teams to challenge Limerick and potentially take their title off them later on in the summer. Is that a view that you would share?
Yeah, I suppose anybody I talk to are kind of ranking them Limerick 1, Galway 2, and the best of Kilkenny, Tip, Cork, you know, Dublin, whoever is there, is 3, and Wexford. If you look at Galway, I mean, some of the scores, Declan, that they've put up in the league, I mean, they scored 325. They scored, sorry, 428 against Waterford, 325 against Cork, down in Cork. So they're putting up huge scores, and Galway seem to have added these goal tallies. Now, I know they got another 5 goals against Westmeath, but we won't include that. But basically playing and putting up those type of scores in league games, particularly scoring goals as well, it's going to be very, very difficult for Dublin to catch them. If you take the Galway backline, I won't mention them all, but I mean, three people that stand out in the Galway, you know, is Garrod McInerney, Dahi Bourke and Pádraic Mannion. I mean, these are absolutely colossal players. Won the All-Ireland in 2017, beaten in 2018. And then throw into the forwards, I believe this Conor Whelan fella for Galway, the right corner forward, I believe he's one of the finest inside forwards that I've seen. You know, right hand down the hurley, takes on his last man all the time, contributes all the time. And add Cathal Mannion onto him. They've also found this Evan Nyland, this new a guy from Claren Bridge in Galway who's taken frees, etc. And I haven't even mentioned Joe Canning at this stage. They may throw him in the middle of the park. They may start him wing forward. They may start him full forward. So Galway would be a formidable team to beat today. They're way up there along with Limerick. They beat Limerick in the National League, I think 26 points to 117. So they actually had the luxury of beating Limerick in a league down in Salt Hill without getting a goal. And that's not easy done. So they did that, and it'll be very, very hard to beat.
Well, we wish Matty and the boys every success there this afternoon against Galway. Kilkenny versus Wexford coming up afterwards. We'll broaden the conversation a little bit here now, because I'm delighted to be joined from Lee's side by two-time All-Ireland winner with Cork, Seanie McCarthy from the Ballinhassig Club. A very good morning to you, Sean.
Good morning, Declan. How are you?
How are things on Lee's side, my friend?
The weather isn't great, but I suppose there's big anticipation and big excitement. I'm looking forward to the game this evening and seeing how we'll pitch ourselves against the All-Ireland champions.
Yeah, nothing like championship and a trip up the road to Turles, is there? Albeit on a Saturday evening.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think with the pandemic over the last 15, 18 months, everyone's lives have been turned around and upside down. All-Ireland's been played in December, and knockouts coming very fast and hurling at different times of the year. It's been very, very strange and different, and sometimes almost exciting and enjoyable. But I suppose this is as close as we've had to real championship again, and we're playing in the month of July and heading up to Turles on a Saturday evening. So something really to look forward to.
Three debutants getting starts today for Cork, managed, of course, by your former teammate, Kieran Kingston, of course. And one of them you will know very well from your club is young Patrick Collins, who has taken over the mantle from Anthony Nash. Great to see him getting his championship debut this evening, but it's a really big game for him, and his role is going to be so important in it if Cork are to achieve victory, Seanie.
Huge. I suppose, just talking about Patrick, the whole family are steeped in GAA. I played with his father. He was also a goalkeeper in Ballinhassig, an understudy to Martin Coleman Sr., who had played with Cork and won the three in a row in the 70s. And then the oldest brother, Matthew, moved to Kilmacud, actually, and he won a Dublin Senior our club medal. I think he was a subkeeper for Dublin Senior Hurlers, a small spell under Joe Cunningham. And then their sister played with All-Ireland at Camogie with Cork. And then you have Patrick, the younger brother, subkeeper, Jordy, younger brother, subkeeper to Patrick today. It's fantastic for our club. It's fantastic for their family. They're a very genuine GAA backbone family. But as you said, a huge game for him today. Limerick, in the last time we played them in the league there a couple of weeks ago, they seemed to have mastered and had a plan for all puck outs, and it backfired big time for us, especially in the first half when we were trying to go short. I'd love to know Cork's strategy today. I have a few ideas, but I think they probably would have been very disappointed on how it went and how our puck outs went the last day against Limerick. So I hope Kieran and his selection team have come up with a master plan to counteract Limerick's attacking of our puck out that they did the last day.
If you were travelling up the road this evening, Sean, would you be travelling more in hope than confidence?
You have to be travelling in hope. Limerick have they're two of the last 3 years are Ireland champions. They're putting up huge scores. Anytime, like Cork played them there in the league in 33 points to 219. Like you look at their All-Ireland's huge scores in each All-Ireland back again, like 30 points. Their backs are as comfortable scoring points as their forwards are. They play with tremendous confidence. They play with tremendous calmness. They seem to have a plan, stick to the plan, never panic. That comes with, there's an air of confidence now, not arrogance, in the team since winning All-Ireland. That comes, but they're also very grounded. So us going up the road today, it's really in hope. Hope we can put a good performance together and that we can be in the game as long as possible. And who knows, we're beginning to get goals this year. Limerick are leak a few goals. Maybe that we could stay with them and sneak a few goals and get out the other side just slightly ahead, but it's really in hope, Declan.
Yeah, shades of 1999 here, I think, at the start of the Championship. Young Cork team, few debutants thrown in, and we all know what happened, of course, at the end of that particular year. Now, we've got a very important night next Saturday, Shawnee, down in Nolan Park in Kilkenny. Thought it might have been Portlaoise, but no, Nolan Park has been selected, which is a fine venue, of course, as well. The under-20 All-Ireland final for 2020, Cork versus Dublin. Cork playing for the first time in 7 months in this Championship. Dublin qualified with a Leinster final victory over Galway. It's going to be some hours hurling down there next Saturday evening, isn't it?
Absolutely. I saw the Dublin-Galway game last week, and Dublin are an absolute, like, Dublin are an up-and-coming hurling team across all grades. They put a lot of work into it, and you can see they're reaping the rewards now of the hard work that has been put in the grassroots. They can talk about sponsorship and money allocation, population. It boils down to people having the appetite to go out at club, at grassroots level, and train young people from the age of 6, 7 up, and then putting the proper structures and the proper academies in place to bring their skill levels on again. And I think it has the hallmarks of being an absolute thriller of a game next week. And Cork is a very young, very lively, fast, skillful team. Dublin, what I saw, are a big, strong, athletic team. Slightly different styles in how they play. So it's going to be a really intriguing game on how it pans out and who will be the dominant person and who will get their game plan opposed upon the other team on a stronger note. But Nolan Park, tight field, Dublin, strong team. I could see Dublin sneakily getting over the line with this one, but I think it has a hallmark for being a cracker.
Oh, please, please God, it will. I'd be delighted in many respects if that was to happen. Indeed, it'd be a great boost for the small ball game in the capital. Shawnee, no doubt you're going to settle down at home later on and get stuck into that Limerick-Cork game up in Thurles. Thanks very much indeed for taking our call on the programme this morning, and we hope to see you soon in Cork.
Absolutely, definitely looking forward to seeing you down.
Thanks very much indeed. Great pleasure to have Shawnee McCarthy there, 2-time All-Ireland medalist on the phone from Cork, giving his thoughts on Limerick and Cork in the Championship this evening. We spoke to him there, Sean Lane, the former Dublin minor and under-21 hurling boss, is with us here in studio. We spoke to him about Dublin and Cork in that under-20 final next Saturday evening at Nolan Park in Kilkenny. And what we've seen of both teams, he's perfectly right there. It's set up for an absolute cracker, Sean.
Absolutely, and the fact that the Cork game was last December, Declan, I had to get out the tape and have a look at the Munster final last night, but what impressed me then obviously just came back to me. They have a fantastic inside forward playing with Cork, but they also Shane Barrett is his name, I think he's from the Blarney club, but their half back line, number 6, Christopher Joyce of the Napiercy club, and Dara O'Leary, I think he must play a senior hurling with the Imokilly division because he's with Watergrass Hill, but those two gave exceptional performance both against Limerick and against Tipperary in the Munster final. They also have to call on the likes of Jack Cahalan, who got the winning goal against Tipperary. So in fairness, with pedigree like that, but I still come back to this Dublin team, and I'll be brief on it. I think they're well tutored. I think Paul O'Brien has done an exceptional job with them. I sent him a text after the game congratulating him. He didn't want to know anything about it. He said the job wasn't finished. He talked to me after the All-Ireland final. I think we've fantastic forwards with Liam Murphy. He got 2 frees the last day that a young lad would be under pressure, wouldn't do it. And also the scores from Lee Gannon and also Dara Purcell from play. If they can do that again, I think Dublin are with a great chance.
Yeah, well, 7:15 next Saturday evening down in Nolan Park in Kilkenny. Just before we go, Sean, from this particular section, some other big Championship games, of course, taking place this weekend. We mentioned Kilkenny and Wexford, which follows Dublin and Galway at Croke Park this afternoon. How do you see that one going?
Well, again, if you look at Kilkenny, I mean, a Davy versus Cody game, is particularly in Championship, is always a very, very high-profile one. Davies had the upper hand on Cody over the last few years, but I know Kilkenny gave Wexford a good out of beating in the league this year. You know, when you have TJ Reid with Kilkenny, and I'd be very impressed with John Donnelly and also Adrian Mullen up front. Adrian Mullen is the Shamrocks club, the same as TJ Reid. I think Kilkenny will, you know, they'll be awful hard beaten. I think their back line have great experience with Parik Walsh, Hugh Lawler, Killian Buckley is still there, and also Paddy Deegan. Kilkenny will be hard beat. Having said all that, on the other side, If the Wexford four forwards of the Jack and Rory O'Connor could get going, Lee Chin, and also if Wexford can get a good game out of Conor McDonald, I think Wexford have a great chance. I'm really looking forward to that match as well. I think they're two absolutely classic games in Croke Park. Couple that with the game between Cork and Limerick, and I honestly think that we're in for a feast of hurling for today.
And in a word, the other Munster semi-final, Clare or Tipperary tomorrow?
Remember one thing, I'm after blowing Galway up a fair bit on their scores, but the one team that beat them fairly comprehensively in the league was Tipperary. So Tipperary, Clare will have had a fantastic drive at beating Waterford last week. But, you know, Tipperary been sitting there waiting for this match, and I fancy tipping that.
OK, so tip tomorrow, and you're backing Limerick, I'd say, tonight, are you?
Yes.
OK. Bit of hesitancy there, Sean, a bit of hesitancy.
Well, you mentioned 1999.
I did.
So maybe, you know, with Cork hurling, you never know, Declan.
OK, right. Thanks very much indeed to Sean. Finally in GAA, Dublin ladies footballers won the Lidl National Football League for only the second time in their history last week, and they beat Cork by 2:15 to 1:13 at Croke Park. Niamh Heatherton of Clontarf got the first goal, while Clonwira star Carla Rowe, on her return, scored the second and crucial goal just a few minutes from the end. One of the mainstays of this team over their five-game league campaign has been the Fianna's Hannah Tyrrell, who made the switch back from rugby to Gaelic football. I took the opportunity to speak to her, having played at Croke Park for the first time in her career last Saturday.
It's been incredible, very much a whirlwind of emotions for me, and something I didn't expect to happen so soon. But as I said, Mick and the girls have welcomed me in, you know, and been really, really supportive, and I'm very lucky that things went our way and results went our way, and here we are today.
You slotted in like you were never away, and you took that Croke Park pitch tonight and kicked some fine scores too.
I don't know, it took a bit of adjustments when I first came in to the panel initially, and as I said, the girls were a great help, but I came in pretty decent shape, I think, and that kind of helped. But as I said, it's all to my teammates for kind of getting me here.
How would you describe it to us, playing in a game like that this evening?
Tiring. No, look, it's an absolutely massive pitch, you know, and as I said, Cork always give us an absolutely tremendous fight, and it was very much tit for tat in the first half, and thankfully we just managed to get a few crucial scores at the right time and pull away and get the win.
Finally for me, only the county's second National League title, which is unbelievable really in some respects, and sets it nicely up for the championship now starting in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we all came here to win in All-Ireland at the end of the year, and there's a lot of games to get there, but this will give us a lot of confidence going into the championship, but we have our sights set firmly on that first game against Tyrone, and you know, we can't look further than that. You know, we don't know what's going to happen then, but we go back training, we go back to the drawing board, and we go again.
Thanks indeed to Hannah Tyrrell. That opening championship game is against Tyrone next Saturday afternoon, Kingspan Breffni Park at 2:00. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport and Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. After the commercial break, it'll be Alan Cawley and football all the way to 11. Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. In the last section of the programme now, which will be football all the way to 11 o'clock with our very good friend and colleague, Mr. Alan Cawley. A very good morning to you, Alan.
Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Sure. Absolutely fantastic. Could do with brightening up a little bit here, but other than that, all is quite well, my friend. Let's start, Al, with the domestic stuff, the SSE Electricity League Premier Division. We have new leaders, outright leaders at the moment, in Shamrock Rovers, who recorded a fine 3-1 victory over Dundalk at Talla Stadium last night.
Yeah, great victory for them, Declan. As you say, it was a big game. Obviously, Dundalk have been revitalised since Finney has gone in. I think they've picked up 7 points from 9 in the last 3 games. So it was a tricky game for Shamrock Rovers because of that, and their own form has been poor enough in the fact that they've only won 2 out of the last 8. And they've been sketchy enough this season. So it was a big win. I think it was a big statement win for them. Especially the fact that they fell behind as well with Pat Hooven scoring the goal. So I think it was a great win for Shamrock Rovers. As you say, they're the outright leaders now, 3 points on top. But it's still very tight at the top. And if Sligo Rovers win tonight, they can obviously go level with them as well. So I still think we're in for a good title race, and obviously all us neutrals want to see that as well. But it was a big win for Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, and two of their goals coming from defenders last night as well, in Liam Scales and Sean Gannon, in what was Richie Towell's debut in the hooped shirt. Now, across the river at Daly Mount Park. We had a game that practically had everything, really. It had five goals. St. Pat's finished with nine men. And Bowes took the points, the 3 points in the 3-2 win.
Yeah, it was a disappointing result for Stephen O'Donnell, but I'd say for Keith Long, he was absolutely delighted, because we've talked a lot about Bowes, Declan, and we've given him a lot of praise. And I, as I say, I've said many times on the show that I think they're very, very close to challenging. But obviously they suffered a heavy defeat down in Sligo last week, losing 4-0, when they had been in a really great run of form. They were 13 points out of 15 up to that. So that was a huge blow to them last week. But I think the way to bounce back, getting the victory against one of their title rivals as well in St. Pat's, I think that was a great victory for them last night. And it just keeps them on the coattails of the leaders. I think there's 8 points of a gap now between themselves and Shamrock Rovers. But as we've seen already in the previous five games, they are capable of going on run the five or six games unbeaten. So I wouldn't rule them out of it just yet. I think that was a huge win that keeps them on the coattails instead of the leaders, and just keeps them in the race. But it was a big win for Keith Long. Stephen will be disappointed, Stephen O'Donnell, but that can happen as well. There's a lot of these big Dublin derbies for the league this year, Declan, for the first time in a long time, as you'll well know. It's very, very competitive. So teams are going to take points off each other. And I think that's what will make for a more interesting tight race that we have as well.
Yeah, first win in three games against the Saints this season for the Gypsies, who of course now turned their attention to European action and Stjarnan of Iceland in the Europa Conference League. And fantastic news that the return leg at the Aviva Stadium a week on Thursday will have, 6,000 spectators? Mm. So that's great news.
Yeah, great news, Declan. Yeah, 6,000 in the Aviva. So I think a lot of work has gone on behind the scenes. I saw Daniel Lambert tweeting about it during the week, just between themselves and the FEI and to get in the game in the Aviva, which is brilliant for them. And I think the tickets are selling really fast as well. So should make for a great night for Bohemians back in Europe as well, against the Icelandic team. So, and I hope all our teams do well in Europe. Obviously, this is a great time of year coming into these European games for all the clubs. And hopefully they all do well, because I think that can only benefit the league in the long run as well, if the teams do well in Europe. And yeah, I'm sure we'll discuss that next week when the games happen.
Shamrock Rovers, of course, away to Slovan Bratislava in the Champions League. So we wish both our capital representatives every success in European fair over the next couple of weeks. And speaking of European fair, Euro 2020 certainly hasn't disappointed, Alan. What about, first of all, last Monday night and the drama in those two games involving Spain France?
It's been absolutely fantastic, Declan. I've loved it. And I think it's been good for international football, because there's a bit of a narrative out there now that Champions League has overtaken international football. And in some ways, maybe it has, because of obviously the quality of teams that we see in the Champions League in the games. But there's still nothing like playing for your country, and that should always be the pinnacle for every player. We see that even with the Italians last night, and the passion, how much it means to them, and how much it means to every player playing for our country. And I think that's what it's thrown up this year, certainly in the Euros, because I've always loved the Euros even more so than the World Cup, especially when it was the 16 teams, Declan, because it almost feels like it's the elite teams against each other, which is great. And I know they've expanded it to 24, and a lot of people were suggesting it may dilute the competition, but I don't think it has. I think it's been a brilliant competition. We have had some of the stories with some of the lesser countries as well in the earlier rounds. And now, obviously, we're down to the business end with the big teams. But there's been a couple like Switzerland getting through as well. You have the Czech Republic, obviously, in the quarterfinal, Ukraine also. So I think it's been a brilliant competition so far. The games, as you say, last Monday were absolutely epic. The Spanish against Croatia was an unbelievable match. And for the follow-up then with the French game after that against Switzerland was absolutely incredible. So I think last night we got off to a good start in the quarterfinals. And obviously, there's another two games tonight as well. So I'm expecting this week to be much the same as what we've seen so far in the tournament, and a real exciting end to it. And it's tough to call at this stage, Declan, who's going to win it, but I think that's what's made it so good this year as well, is obviously France crashing out Portugal. So it's been difficult to call in the games leading up to this, and I'd say that'll be the same in what we've left of it also.
2 points on England, who of course played the Ukraine in the Stadio Olimpico in Rome this evening in their quarter-final tie. Does the fact that the game in Rome neutralise it in some respects? And also, the Jack Grealish question for England. Does Southgate start him tonight, or does he bring him on to have the level of influence that he had against the Germans on Tuesday?
Yeah, two good questions. I think for the first one, with the fact that it's in Rome, it may not be a bad thing, Declan, because I'd say the expectation and the hype levels over in England at the moment, as we've seen with some of the newspapers during the week, it's through the roof. And Southgate is doing a brilliant job in itself, just dampening down expectations. So it might not be a bad thing that they've actually come out of Wembley. And obviously they have the incentive that if they win this game tonight, which I think they should, they'll be back in Wembley for the semi-final, and they'll want that in the semi-final. tonight is a potential banana skin, so it'll be just a case of getting through this, which they should with the quality that they have. So I don't think it's a bad thing, the fact that they're playing away in Rome tonight. And the Jack Grealish question, up to now I think Southgate has got all his big decisions right in his team lineup, and obviously the clamour for Grealish and Foden and Mount and some of the young generation, the brilliant talent that they have, I think a weaker manager would have buckled under that pressure, Declan, but I think he's held his ground. He's done what he believes is the right thing to do in each game to get them through. So far that's been proven right, but I think the onus is slightly different tonight. The onus is on them, I think, to come out and take the game to Ukraine, because they have the better players and they're the better team. And I think he might throw in one of the more attacking players. It wouldn't surprise me if he does change it up tonight and we see maybe Grealish start. So that wouldn't surprise me. But at the moment, I think it's very difficult to criticise Southgate in any way. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's handled everything brilliantly so far. And I do think they'll get through tonight, regardless of whether Grealish starts or not. I still think they'll get through.
Yeah, he's so calm and collected, isn't he, Southgate? Nothing seems to ruffle him at all, which is unlike a lot of the previous incumbents of the England manager's position.
Yeah, and that's where he's done an unbelievable job, Declan, how he conducts himself and how he carries himself. And as you say, the experience that he's had, obviously, as a player as well, coming through. So he would have seen all those things going on with previous managers. And it can be a poison chalice, the English job, as we all know. And they can be their own worst enemies in terms of putting pressure on the team and the players. And he's seen that. He's tried to create a bit of a club culture. When they got to the semi-final, obviously, at the World Cup, it wasn't a case of him coming home and patting himself on the back. He actually came home and done a lot of reflection on where they can improve and how they can get better. And they've been building up towards this, and not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well in what he does. So, as I say, they've been set up for this competition in mind. They're going great guns at the moment. I think they'll get to the semi-final. Obviously, the draw has opened up for them as well, which is the bit of luck that maybe you deserve or that you need to win a competition. But sometimes you earn your luck as well. And as I say, he's very likeable. He's done a brilliant job so far, especially when, as I say, the hype that's going on in England at the moment, I'd say it's through the roof. But he does an unbelievable job in just dampening down that expectation and keeping it real. And I think with the players that he has as well, you look at the likes of Kane and Jordan Henderson, Maguire, big characters as well, captains at their clubs, big clubs. I think they probably do a great job in doing that for him as well. So it's all going well for them at the moment. I think they'll beat Ukraine, as I said, Declan, and they'll have a tougher game if they get Denmark in the semi-final. But he would snap your hand off to be in a semi-final against Denmark.
Oh, absolutely. Spain already through, of course, and Italy after victories last night. We're expecting England to come through their game against the Ukraine this evening. Going to be a fascinating final week of the tournament, Alan, at the real business end of it. So we've been asking people different predictions earlier on. Ken Doherty has the Ukraine 130-1. So as I said to him, good luck with that one. Who do you think is going to be lifting that famous trophy tomorrow week in the final?
As I said earlier, Declan, I think it's difficult to call, but you're looking at the teams that are left at the moment, and I think Italy have been probably the story of the competition, certainly on the pitch at the moment, from the very first night. Obviously they opened the competition and they were so impressive that first night against Turkey, and they've carried on that form all the way through. Obviously it was a tough game against Austria in the last round, but last night against Belgium I thought they were absolutely terrific. And they've been brilliant. And not just, as I say, the football that they've played. You look at the way they managed the game at the end, the passion, the love they have for defending as well and keeping the team out. You see that at the end with Bonucci and Chiellini. And Mancini has done an unbelievable job with them. So I think they're probably the favourites with what's left at the moment. I don't fancy Spain to win it. I thought Spain will always, I think, with the players they have at the moment, it's obviously nowhere near the level of player they had when they were winning and dominating things a few years ago. And I just don't think they've enough to go on and win it, Declan. And I think we've seen in the last two games, they're all susceptible to conceding a sloppy goal, as we saw against Croatia when they let them back into the game. And even with Switzerland last night, they should have been able to see that game out, but they let Switzerland back into it. So I don't think they'll win it. And I think then, so that'll be Italy on that side. And then I think it'll come down between England and Denmark on the other side. And as I say, I just have a strong feeling for England. I said it at the start, they had a great chance. The stars seem to be aligning for them at the moment. It'll be a difficult game if they play Denmark. Denmark are a good side, and we all know the momentum and everything that's going on with Denmark since that unfortunate incident with Christian Eriksen as well, and they've huge momentum with them also. So that'll be a very, very difficult game. But I'd say if you're looking at it right now, I think Italy are the favourites to win it.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you on that. I was just wondering, does yourself and Roberto Mancini share a tailor? He's the best cultured manager I've seen in this tournament so far. Briefly, Al.
Another reason why I love the Italians, the style, Declan. You know me and the style, so he looks great, to be fair, Mancini. And yeah, the Italians have always had a bit of class.
They have indeed. Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call, thank you very much indeed for joining us, giving that insight into domestic and Euros as well. We look forward to talking to you ahead of the final next week. Thank you very much indeed, Al.
Thanks, Declan.
Take care. Fair play to you, Alan Cawley there. Well, that's pretty much all we've got time for on this week's show. Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to SureMyVan.ie. Don't forget to go to our social media pages for the Lucky 15, which we had earlier in the programme. Our thanks indeed to producer Jane McNamara. I'd also like to thank all our guests who joined us on the show today. Saturday Live with Carol Dooley is coming up after the Sunshine News at 11. We'll all be back next week at the same time of 9 o'clock. So until then, have a good week, my friends, and stay safe out there.